Well, we're going to give this a go, see what happens. It's the news, according to me. Good Monday, Monday. It's a Monday, May 1st, 2023, 8:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in my home studio this morning with my favorite drink in my hand. It is a vanilla chai with vanilla creamer. Not my most favorite, just one of my favorites. I mean, chai is my favorite, but then the creamer is doesn't quite reach the tippy top of what my preferred. I like Almond Joy creamer. So, there you go. It's been a while since I've had a show. I had a show last week that I actually recorded and did not post. This has been a problem with me being on the road sometimes with the particular schedule I'm going to have over the next couple of weeks. This coming week, I have I'll be down in Fayetteville. Is Fayetteville in Arkansas? I don't know, it's somewhere down there. Fayetteville, Georgia, maybe. Out of Fayetteville, somewhere. Alabama. I don't know where it is. Well, Fayetteville. I think it's its own country, I think. It's a country all its own, I think. Just Fayetteville. The country of Fayetteville. I'll be out of the country in Fayetteville. And I'll be there on Wednesday night. I'll probably be in Chicago on Tuesday night. That's the plan anyway. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then on, I will actually be in Cincinnati Thursday night, and Friday night I will be in White Plains. So it gives you an idea of what's going on with me. Now the problem with this is that my mornings are going to be very busy. I probably will not have a morning show, except for today and tomorrow. Tomorrow, hopefully, have a morning show. It'll be really early. Hopefully I'll get it posted and everything, because I've got a lot of stuff to do tomorrow before I head out, possibly to Chicago. I'm probably going to go to Chicago tomorrow. And if that's the case, and I will be, doing a later day, later time in the day show on Wednesday. Well, it'll just be later. Well, yeah, it'll be later. It'll be early afternoon probably, or possibly in the evening. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do. I might do an evening show. And then post it on the following morning. That's how that might go. But there will definitely not be a live show on Friday morning. Friday is going to be an immensely busy day. Let's just put it that way. There probably will be a Friday evening show. Now, maybe I'll do a live Friday evening show. The problem last week I had, I wasn't able to take my laptop with me. Now, I'm going to take my laptop this week. At least that's the plan. Because it's really just difficult to do any kind of work without it. I mean, I can do the work on my iPad. It just takes longer. It's harder to see the screen. I can't do as much work because I don't have as much, you know, screen space, basically. It's more difficult to work with. And I can't get as much done. So I don't have other things to do besides this show, believe it or not. So I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to take off without my laptop. Now, having said that, here I am. I'm at my home studio today. Tomorrow morning, I'll probably also be at my home studio. I really need to get to my main headquarters today at some point, possibly tomorrow as well. Just have a few things to take care of over there. And because of that, I got a lot of phone calls to make today, too. Boy, I'm kind of overwhelmed with all the stuff I have to do. However, there's also overwhelming in the stuff I need to catch up on. I did speak a little bit about Tucker Carlson's departure last week, and I think that was on the show that I didn't actually post. And I really need to follow up on that. It's been interesting just to hear the other pundits. And I'm typically, more than talking about the news, I like talking about what other pundits are saying about the news. Because trying to weed through all of the spin is and just the lack of perspective sometimes that some of these folks have it's kind of amazing to me. First of all, you have the spin from the perpetrators themselves, the White House administration people, folks who put out press releases and reports and answer the questions from reporters, they have a spin. They have 95% of everything that the hip-hop artist KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, says is read from a script. She pretends like she's not reading. She tries to pretend like she looks down with her eyelids kind of half closed. She's trying to look up, but she's trying to keep her face up, but she's looking down at, and she's reading from a script, and she can't even make it sound like it's normal and natural. That folder is supposed to be notes, not a scripted response. And she reads it as a scripted response, but she's trying to read it in her own natural tone, and she fails miserably every single time. She's been in the job long enough now. You would think she would get better skilled at this, but she is not improving. And it's become a very it's just disgusting. I mean, it's very embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for her because she's not a bad person necessarily. I don't know. I don't know anything about her, but I just know that she's not. Her aptitude is, her skill set is not for this job. She's just not. You know, she's got the right gender, I guess, or whatever that is. She checked off all the right social boxes. The right woke stuff. But she doesn't have the skill set for this. But they don't care. It's not about getting the job done right. It's about having the demographics, you know, put in there. Just the way this administration is. Everything on the left is going that route. And people are getting sick of it. People are getting really tired of it. I can sense it in the population, and just even the people on, even Democrats who are like traditional Democrats, like the old school Democrats. And there are still some out there in the nation, by the way. The people in the flyover states who are Democrats typically are not the woke bunch. And there are people who are, I would say, left-leaning, who don't even know. They think that they're independents. They're not independents. They're very left. And I've even talked to some people who, well, I'm not a Democrat. I don't associate with the Democrats. But on every single issue, they fall in line with the Democrat policies. Every single one. Once in a while, you'll find that they have a smidgen of maybe the Second Amendment or the First Amendment that they'll agree to. Other than that, they're right in line with. Now, keep in mind, the First Amendment, for this whole freedom of speech thing, is freedom of speech that we allow. Or what they call correct speech or legal speech. You have the rights, the freedom to speak the truth as we see it. And nothing else, or as we call it, the truth. Whether it's truth or not. It's just ridiculous. And of course, the Second Amendment, they have all these weird opinions about it. And now what you're hearing now is it's racist. The Second Amendment's racist. Because the Second Amendment was put in place to keep slaves in their place, to avoid an insurrection an uprising from the slaves. That's what the Second Amendment was for. That's the new spin. You're going to hear that more and more, because it's coming out of academia now. And some of the, like Cambridge, I think Cambridge was professor. There was a professor recently that was talking about, you know that this is whatever. Know your history. This is what happened. What? They're making this stuff up. But anyway, I have my cup here. And it's keeping me calm. I'll just keep calm and carry on. A lot of other things going on. This whole Tucker thing. Let's talk about the Tucker thing for a minute. I hear pundits talking about, well, Bill O'Reilly left and that was a big deal. And somebody else, Kelly, what's her name? Megyn Kelly. Is that her name? She left. And, oh, everybody thought that was going to be the end of, you know, Fox. That's just, oh, they can't, you know, they can't survive it. No. What amazes me is the pundits make these kinds of comments without putting any context to this at all. Tucker Carlson in a sea. Now, keep in mind, 15 years ago, when the issue, I think it was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when Bill O'Reilly was fired from Fox News. At that time, there wasn't a Newsmax, a One America News Network, a Right Side Broadcasting. The news organizations that were online and were basically Fox, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, and NBC, the legacy media, and Fox. The online news organizations were very few, and as far as the right-leaning ones, even the left, like the Young Turks, I don't even think they were around 12 years ago. It's been a very, and YouTube was still pretty much an open and free platform. People, you know, anybody could be on there and have whatever kind of opinions they wanted. They weren't censored at that time that we knew of. I think there was still some shadow banning, that kind of thing. I think there was some throttling and promoting. I think they were just discovering over there at YouTube how to do all that and how to get away with it. Of course, then, you know, once the whole Trump thing happened, that was the end of that. They made sure they knew how to do it. And they did it with ferocity. I don't even know what that means. So what we have now is a person, Tucker Carlson, who was popular because of his message. Now, you can say what you want about Tucker. He did come from a family who was rich. His family was a wealthy family. He knows that side of the fence. He seems to be fairly well-grounded. Now, there's been people who there have been who worked close to him. Of course, all these allegations now of misogynists, and he yelled at people and all this kind of stuff. That stuff came and went so fast. That's already pretty much off the radar now, surprisingly enough. Which is interesting to me that it's all of a sudden you're not. You know, it's not being talked about even. Because people are coming out that have worked for him saying that they never saw that in the guy. They never had that experience with that guy. That his staff and him worked very well together. Now, these kinds of allegations, remember Kavanaugh, all this other stuff, the way the left works and the way they operate. Anybody who's disgruntled, they can find somebody. They can always find somebody to come up with all kinds of accusations and allegations. That's always going to happen. That's what's happening. So what we have here is this very strange. They're trying to equate Tucker. Well, Fox is going to be around long after Tucker leaves. It's not going to hurt Fox at all. Well, it's hurting Fox. And here's the reason why. This is why it's different. Bill O'Reilly was fired because of a scandal. People weren't really mad at Fox News for firing Bill O'Reilly. They liked Bill O'Reilly. Some people refused to see his indiscretions, I guess. Some of his issues that he was having. And because of that, they were a little bit upset about him leaving. However, you know, now Sean Hannity's been around for a long time. Hannity's got quite an audience as well. But Hannity, even though he claims to be an independent, and he's registered as an independent in the state of New York. Hey, I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. Or conservative. He's registered conservative. I think he calls himself registered conservative. He's registered conservative. Well, I don't care what you label yourself. I don't care what label you put on yourself. A wolf who puts on sheep's clothing is still a wolf. Well, I'm not a wolf. I'm a sheep. See, this is my badge. I've got my badge on. It's my sheep. It says sheep right here. Well, that's not exactly, doesn't exactly change who you are. Your message is the same. I'm not saying Sean Hannity's a wolf. All I'm saying is you can't just put the label on yourself and say, well, I'm a registered conservative. This is like somebody saying they're an independent or that they're a social liberal or what is the term? I consider myself to be a conservative, not independent, but a conservative libertarian. And I know people who will say, oh, yeah, well, I'm a social libertarian. Okay. Look up the definition of social libertarian. It's communist. You're communist. Exactly what you are. Right? And it's just the definition of it. So be careful what you label yourself. Hannity carries the water for the Republican Party. He constantly has. Now, I didn't used to like Newt Gingrich very much. Now, I think as Newt has gotten older, he stopped playing the game. I think he's become more down to earth. He's more grounded, I think, and centered in what he believes. And I think what he believes has come out. He's old enough now, he doesn't care about the popularity anymore. He's not running for president. He's not doing any of those things. So all he's doing now is basically he's just selling it like it is. I think he's come full circle now, and he's actually just, I don't agree with all of his opinions and in his prognostication. I don't believe he's correct in all those things. I disagree with him on some of those things, which is fine. But as a general rule, I think he actually has become a conservative, a limited government individual. Now, I think he's still a little bit of a warmonger in some ways. I've not heard him come out against the Ukraine thing. I think he's kind of basically falling into the line of supporting all this money that's going to Ukraine. However, there's a lot of voices on both sides of this whole Ukraine thing. And I don't know who to believe. I really don't know who to believe. And I'm not going to get involved in it. All I know is I feel like we're being duped. That's what I know, especially with the financial part of things. Now, having said that, this whole thing about Tucker is he had a following in the midst of a myriad of choices that people have to watch among the conservative media. He was still outdoing all the other news media combined. People would tune in to see Tucker on Fox News. They would kind of put up with everything else on Fox for the purpose of, I want to see what Tucker has to say about what's going on. See what's on Tucker's show tonight. Tucker was fired for telling the truth. Tucker wasn't fired because of a scandal. Tucker wasn't fired because of something else that was going on. He was fired for a political reason. This, in my opinion, is why there is going to be backlash 10 times greater than what we ever saw with Fox with regard to Megyn Kelly or Bill O'Reilly. I never cared for Bill O'Reilly that much to begin with, and maybe that taints my view of him leaving Fox. I wasn't that upset about him leaving Fox. But the reasons why he left, I think there were a lot of people who were like, yeah, he needs to go. Even people who were fans. I listened to the guy. I just I really can't stand the way he comes across. And maybe it's that East Coast thing. I don't know. It's just the way he talks. But I guess that's where my issue is here with this whole thing, that in this case, it is very different. People are mad at Fox for doing what they did to Tucker because they supported him and they liked the fact that he was telling the truth. And basically, that's why they fired him. He had a difference of opinion and they didn't like that. That's what you call fascism. Now, these are the people, these are the oligarchs, if you will. The people with money, the Rupert Murdochs, they're the folks who control the purse strings. These are the ones who are stopping speech, stopping differences of opinion. They're the ones who want to be in charge. And they're claiming that the right, the people on the right, are the fascists. I think I went over this a couple weeks ago, and strangely enough, Dinesh D'Souza said the same thing last week. Who are the real fascists? Is it a right wing? It's always, the definitions have changed, by the way. In fact, I'm one of these days, I'm going to go up. Maybe I can get to it from here during the show. I might just put on a little bumper thing and run over and get my old dictionary. It's my 30-year-old dictionary. See what it says about fascism. Now, I know that they were already pushing the idea that it was a right wing organization, that fascism somehow was right wing. It was not at all. We've gone over this before, and I think most people understand it, but it's for those of you who haven't heard the show before or haven't heard this concept before, look into it a little bit about the National Socialist German Workers' Party, Nazis. That's what the Nazi Party was. It was a socialist working party, German working workers' party. It was a union that became the fascists. You will do this. You will not say that. Or the full weight of the government will come down upon your head. You'll be socially ostracized, marked. This is what we are contending with here. Who's doing that? For example, there are these... There's these two kids, I guess. I can't think of their names right now. I was going to pull up the audio. They're on TikTok. They're coming out with these rants. They're, these two kids are, both of them are just ranting about how the Gen Zers were mad at the Republican Party. We've got, you know, Joe Biden's the best president ever since, you know, ever in the history of mankind. And these are young kids. They're like in their 18, I guess, or 19. Talking about how they're, you know, these kids are being killed by, you know, people because people want their freedoms and their guns. But the Gen Zs are going to vote and they're going to come out and blah, 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 blah. All these, you know, they're trying to drum up. It seems, here's what's weird about this. You don't see kids that age get that passionate about something on their own. Something is feeding this. Kids that age don't care that much about politics. They have opinions, but they don't get in a camera and start ranting over and over consistently. And they supposedly have millions of people watching this stuff. Stuff's going viral, strangely enough. I have to understand the TikTok platform. Now, no other platform are they going viral on. It's just TikTok, which explains that's if you look into that and understand why it's doing that, if you understand the algorithms behind all that. And they have claimed up and down that they don't work for the DNC because you would think that they work for the Democrats. Just by the way they're acting. You guys are getting paid. The suspicion came out right away when these guys started getting popular, because it just seems unnatural. There's something uneasy about it, because it is. Now, they have claimed up and down, they've sworn up and down that they don't work for the Democrat Party. They're not getting paid by the Democrat Party. Well, here's how it works. It's true. They're not getting paid by the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party is paying a little side business, and these guys work for that side business. They're getting tens, actually over hundreds of thousands of dollars to do what they're doing. And of course, they're boosting TikTok. You can boost the behind the scenes, the parties involved can boost the phony AstroTurf kind of thing with the make it look like it's going viral. It's not really going viral. You don't see them going viral on Twitter or even on Facebook or YouTube. So here again, we have this deceptive, what looks like these kids are passionate and they look at their, yeah, get behind them. They're going to be the leaders. And what you find out is they're being paid by the left. They're puppets. Or as the book would say, they're useful idiots. Because they have, and they have no idea. They have no idea. They might have some political opinions deep down. I don't know. But the money is what's motivating them right now. This is where they're at. It is a phony sense of, it's just a phony sense of righteousness. It's all synthetic. So, and just this whole rant at the camera thing. And then the lies that are being spewed out. Lowest unemployment in 54 years. Really? Do you understand the matrix by which you're measuring some of these things? Well, they constantly change the numbers. First of all, you can't tell everybody to stop working and then open it up so that when they come back to work, you can say you've created all these jobs. That's what's happened. Everybody stop working today so that tomorrow we can create 100 million jobs. I can say I created 100 million jobs because everybody stopped working today. There's zero employment today, but tomorrow we created 100 million jobs. The only jobs that government creates are government jobs. People out there who are turned loose and turned free to create, to be productive, to explore their idea, their entrepreneurialism, to take the risk. This is what gets me about the, you didn't build that crowd. You didn't build that. People who built the roads and did all these other things and made the infrastructure so that you could do your business. I'm the one who took the risk. You didn't take the risk that I took. Not everybody that starts a business is successful the first time. I started one business. I started many businesses. Always got some kind of business going on. Since I was in grade school, it has just been a part of my DNA. I used to go to, I had two businesses I was doing when I went to school. In grade school, fourth and fifth grade, and sixth grade. Let me give you a little story about my early years. Boy, now that I'm thinking about it, there's a lot more things than I didn't even think about. I used to walk back and forth to school, and it was I had the option of taking the bus. That was actually far enough away from the school that the school provided a bus stop for me if I wanted it. And I turned it down. I either could walk to school and take 30 minutes, or I could get on the bus for an hour because I was going to be the first and the last person, first picked up and last dropped off. Every day. I didn't want to do that. I'd rather walk back and forth to school. So I did. I walked back and forth to school. Now, after fifth and sixth grade, I had a snare drum. I was a drummer. And 3 days a week, I would take my snare drum. I would carry that thing to school and back. It was a little over a mile. And I had to go over a bridge walk down through the little town. It was just a little bitty town. And I would walk over to the grade school with my drum. I was a little runt. I was very young. I was 4 years old when I started school. So give you an idea. Everybody else in the class was always older than me. And typically, usually bigger than me. Now, so I would be struggling with getting this thing, hauling this thing back and forth every day. Not every day. Monday, 3 days a week. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. In spite of that, I would pass a candy store on my way home that was open when I came home. I would stop in every day and I would buy candy. I just started buying candy for myself. And when I would go to school the next day and I had candy, people would say, "Hey, where'd you get that?" Well, I started selling some of it to the other kids. And I started realizing, hey, I could start taking orders. Or I can just have some stuff on. At first, I just started ordering extra. I started getting extra stuff. I had an allowance, so I could buy a little candy. I had my lunch money. And I would go in there and buy certain stuff, and then I would take it to school the next day and sell it. So I was getting candy, you know, keeping my stock supply up there for the other kids. They were coming in on the bus from out of town. They didn't have a way to get the candy store, so I was buying them candy. Selling it to them. Then another buddy of mine and I came up with this other business idea. He actually came up with the idea. I just kind of helped him out with it. We had a pen repair business. We had this little case of all these little pen parts. Now, this is back when pens, you couldn't just get a pen everywhere. You had to buy pens. People just didn't give them away back then. It's a big deal if you got a pen with somebody's business name on it. This is back in the 70s. Early 70s. So we had this very interesting little business where somebody's pen would break. It's kind of a big deal. And these little click pens, you know, click and the click. Or they had regular pens, but just whatever they had. We had parts to, you know, we can find a part to repair that. We'd repair the part for 5 cents or for whatever. For a couple pennies. Which back then meant something. Because for a penny, you could buy, you know, I think 5 cents for a candy bar back then. Give you an idea. For a nice size candy bar. And of course, the Carter years came along in 76. Price of sugar and chocolate went up. Candy prices went like doubled overnight in no time at all. It's ridiculous. Hurt my business. I was 9 years old. I was concerned about that stuff. So we had I don't know. I think it was actually, I would have been, when Carter was in office, I would have been, how old was I? 14? Because I was 14, 13 or 14 right at that time. By that point, I wasn't doing the candy business anymore. But I was selling candy. My father had a little business, and I would man the store sometimes, and we sold soda pop and candy bars. My dad paid me, and all the pop and candy I could eat. That's why that was my pay. It was great for my health, I'm sure too. Very nutritious. But the I got a very good childhood there. Growing up there. But the point is, I had a point. I'm sure I did. This whole entrepreneurial thing. You know, then I, as I got older, I was never afraid of taking a risk and trying a business. Never afraid of that. Never really scared me at all. Which scared everybody around me, especially my wife. She was not used to just jumping out in the deep end there. Hey, I got an idea. And she'd go off running and crying. Oh, no, he's going to do it again. Here he goes. I don't know what he's going to do. And once in a while, I'd hold down a regular job. And then I just enough until I figured out what else I was going to do. So I started this aircraft cleaning business. It's one of my major businesses I started. And that turned into a mobile. I had to set everything up to clean an airplane. I had to be mobile. I had to have everything on a truck, water, everything. Because some of the hangars that I was going to clean airplanes didn't even have water there. So I had a generator for my electricity. I had a tank of, a big water tank on the back, and we'd go around and wash and wax people's airplanes. I'd do considerable amount of that. Well, then it turned into, I can do cars. I can pull up, somebody goes to work during the day, they don't have time to wash and wax their car. I can wash and wax their car on a Thursday or Friday, have it all ready for them on the weekend, right there in the parking lot of where they work. So that's what I would do. Had down to a science. It was a great business. It was very viable. It was a lot of elbow work. And if I would have been able to hire enough people to do the job on their own, I would have very easily been able to expand that business. I was even looking into turning it into a franchise. But of course, I wasn't quite business savvy enough to understand that yet. I was still a young kid, young buck in my 20s. Of course, I didn't have an MBA. I didn't have a college degree. I just learned all this stuff. And then I ended up going to, I started another business. In the process of doing that, I became a flight instructor. I was doing that to pay for my flight training. So along with another job, I had a full-time job, and then I was doing this on the side. Ended up, after that, doing the flight instructing thing. Well, that grew into a regular flight school. I had two different airports that I was operating off of. I had eight airplanes, several employees, full-time employees, doing all this work in flight training people, banner towing, advertising, aerial advertising. And then I worked my way into working for some other people doing charter work and that kind of thing. So this whole time I was always doing something on the side with a business of my own. And just exploring other business opportunities and stuff like that was going on. The flight school never really made any money. It should have, but I was kind of getting ripped off by some people. There's always something that came along and kind of, every time you get some money built up, the money was always gone. And just kind of flushed it down the toilet occasionally. And I had some people doing me wrong. Didn't know it till several years later. And of course, that led into the airline work. So I started doing that, and I was but then I started another business. And this time it was a business where I kind of invented this thing and started selling it. Started selling it all over the world. And then 2008 hit and destroyed that market. By the end of 2009, I was shutting it down. It just wasn't viable at that point because the market was just bad. Been through a lot of things like that. Then I started a couple other businesses and was working on some stuff and trying to find a business idea that would take off, trying to help my nephew at the time. We were trying to work on I was trying to find a business that maybe he could kind of get a hold of and grasp onto for himself and kind of turn him loose with it. And we were just kept getting knocked back in our butts every time we'd just start making some momentum. Something would happen, legislation or whatever it was that would happen that would just not... It was just difficult. And, of course, then at one point, I started another business. It actually started taking off. It was a crazy thing I never even thought of. Well, it's the voiceover business. Now, that business has a lot of different avenues to go down. I actually started a recording studio, started doing music projects, and the voiceover thing just kind of dropped in my lap. Started doing that. So the whole thing, I got a couple other ideas from some other businesses now, and now I do more investing in other people with their energy. I'll throw the money at them; they can use their energy to do some things. Seems to be working out okay. So the prospect here is that this idea that you didn't build that, no, but I did take the risk. In fact, the one business I started in 2005 that failed in 2009, or that I had to shut down, still a viable business. Business idea. That business itself, I used everything I had saved up, all of my retirement, everything I had, I invested in that business. Everything. It was an all or nothing venture. During that time, my wife basically paid all the bills, most of the bills. I was paying for a lot of things, but I was racking up some debt at that time as well. But there was cash flow, but it was I was trying to finance the business, get it off the ground, and it had a huge amount of potential. But then, of course, things started falling apart, especially after 2008, and it just became this impossible hurdle to overcome. Recognized it early enough to shut it down. It could have gotten worse. Tried to retool, rethink how I was going to do this and adjust for the economic situation. There was just no way around it. Now, if I would have had $100,000 in the bank, I probably could have made something happen. But that was not where I was financially. So I ended up shutting that down, doing some other things for a while. In the meantime, of course, now here I am, with no retirement and very few assets at that point. I still had some assets, but nothing that I could really draw from. This is the MBA that I have, if you want to call it that. I've found myself coaching people who want to start businesses now with a lot of advice, a lot of life experience, knowledge, real world stuff. Everything from bookkeeping, accounting, advertising, marketing, branding, all of the esoteric things, so to speak, but it's really the guttural work of starting a business. And people, the things that people don't see, they just think, oh, you just have a business. All you have to do is have money, do this, and then the business is going to happen. No, it just doesn't work that way. And these people who think that we built the roads, we did all this stuff. That's why you can survive. That's why you're able to be successful. No, that's not why the business works. If that's all it takes, then anybody who lives on a street that you hand money to, if you just walk up to the general public, hand them $100,000, see if they start a business with that money, see what they do with it. About half the population will have it blown in a year on something stupid like a car. I am not real big on buying brand new cars. I did it once. Wife and I both bought brand new cars 1 year. We're not going to do that again. It's nice to have the warranty. It's nice to have all that stuff. But you know what? It does not make any sense. Of course, the value of buying a new car, you get the warranty, you get all that stuff. Like I was saying, I think the thing that, it's not that there's anything wrong with buying a new car. It's the point of people, if you can afford to go out and just pay cash for a car and buy one brand new, that's great. So many people will buy a car with borrowed money because they want to drive that nice new car. Well, you know what? In 3 or 4 years, when that car is paid off, it's not going to be a nice new car. And you finally own it. Now, you were driving around a nice new car for a few years. But the car really owned you because you had to work to make the money to pay back the loan. Well, I got 0% interest. No, you didn't. It was built into the price of the car. We'll wonder why cars cost so much right now. The price of a new car has more than doubled in the last 10 years. It's gotten ridiculous. Now, it hasn't been too bad in the last few years. Of course, now they don't have parts. They don't have chips. They don't have computer parts. All the stuff that goes with it. They've outsourced so much of this now that they're having problems. However, if you have to borrow money to buy a car, the car owns you. I would contend, and I know this sounds very, I've been there. I know, I understand. I've got to have a car. I got to be able to get back and forth to work, and I can't afford a car that's dependable without borrowing the money to do it. Okay. I get that. This isn't a financial channel. I'm not a doctor or a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a epidemiologist or an engineer. But there's some basic principles in life where we live beyond our means. Just because the bank says, oh, yeah, we can give you a loan for this. You make enough money that we can give you this loan. No, they're protecting themselves in that. They're not protecting you. They're saying, well, you make enough money that we'll take the risk on you being able to pay us back this loan over the next 15 years or 20 years or whatever it is. What they're saying is, we'll let you borrow the money knowing that you can pay us back with interest, that you're going to have enough money to do that because you make this much money. So we're going to assume that you're going to continue to make your payments. So we'll let you have the house. It's just the American way. That's the way it happens, and everybody thinks it's normal. Don't be normal. And I'm saying this out of a lifetime of having gone through it, of having the mortgage, of having the car loans. Just because you think you can afford it or the bank says you can afford it doesn't mean you can afford it. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Now, I know that there are people, there are rich man, poor man, rich dad, poor dad, that guy, Kiyosaki. He is totally on the other side of this thing. He does not like the Dave Ramsey way of doing life. He is all into borrowing money, debt. He loves debt. He loves borrowing money. He has, now, you have to understand, there are very few, the common person out there, the normal individuals, the 100 million people out there who are working for a living, cannot live like that. This is the problem that you run into is, he is a unique individual in a unique circumstance. He's trying to sell you on the idea that you have to live like that, that everybody could live like that. That's not going to work in this economy. That's if 300 million people in this country, or at least 150 million of the working capable people, the working class, if you will, they all borrowed $300 million. How would that work? We're all living on debt, lots of debt. Nobody has a job. We're just all living on real estate. It's not possible. It's almost like a Ponzi scheme. The people at the bottom aren't going to make it. You just can't do this. It's not feasible for most people. I love the concept. I love his attitude towards it and how he did it. It's an interesting story, and it works great for some people. There are a few people out there who can do it and make it successful. Now, you have to keep in mind that where he really makes his money, or where he made his initial money, was in the selling of the books that he writes, and the speaking that he does. That's where he's producing something. Otherwise, he's just shuffling money around. He's making money by making good investments. That's not producing anything. You and your life need to be productive. You need to be able to produce something, whether it's in the form of artwork, it's a skill that you have, labor that you can invest in something and get paid, you know, exchange for like plumbing or heating, electrical, carpentry, some kind of a skill like that, accounting, whatever it is, that you have a tradable skill, a productive skill, that you can take to society and trade that for the goods that you need. You either have that ability or to produce, Or maybe you just have the ability to manage things well. And that's what he's doing. He's managing his money. He's managing property, whatever it is he's doing. That's the skill you have. Now, he has the ability to write books. And maybe he doesn't even write them. Maybe he has ghostwriters working for him. Most of these people do. 80% of the big authors out there, these people who are popular like Kilmeade and even O'Reilly, all these people, they're not writing these books. And if they are, the content's miserable because I've never read one of Bill O'Reilly's books. I've never read one. I don't know if it's a really basic, simple book. All I know is to write a book with content that's worth reading and it actually has contained something that's worth sifting through takes a lot of effort. Now, there are people out there who actually do write their own books. They will hide away for years doing these books. 2 to 3 years. They're not out speaking on the... Well, they might do some speeches here and there because of past books that they've written. That's part of the book tour. That's part of the selling of the book that they've read or that they've written. I left my chai. Where did I put my chai? I sat down somewhere. I can't find it. However, the writing itself, if they are doing it themselves, takes an incredible amount of discipline and amount of time to produce that. These people who are working, you know, Brian Kilmeade works 12 hours a day, or he works some ridiculous amount of time a day. He's on TV all the time. Next thing you know, he's coming out with a book. Every 6 months, he comes out with a book. Bill O'Reilly comes out with a book about every year, every 6 months or however long it is. On top of doing a television, radio, and everything else he's doing with all the content that he's got creating, you know, he's really creating. Show prep and all that stuff. No way. There's absolutely no way he's writing those books. No way. He's either sleeping 3 hours a night or he has a staff doing everything for him or he has a ghostwriter. And I guarantee you these are situations where there's ghostwriting going on. Nobody can type that fast. Or the content itself is so basic and simple that he has a framework that he puts the book together in, and it's just, there's not, it's like every chapter that you read is just like has one point. It's just an expansion on one point. And there's really nothing there. It's a lot of platitudes and superlatives. I don't understand, very few people can pull this off and have a busy life. I'm just going to say it that way. But being a producer, and this is where, getting back to this point of, if you handed somebody $100,000, half the people in the country would spend it on something stupid, thinking that they just won the lottery, thinking that they're, look at all this money I've got now. $100,000 won't go very far in today's world, especially if you buy a car. I just worked with a friend of mine recently who, he just bought a new car. He's all proud. He ordered it. He hasn't got it yet. And it's a vehicle. I'll call it a vehicle. And I know about what he paid for it. It's a ridiculous amount of money. Very nice, awesome vehicle. He's going to have a lot of fun with this thing. However, it's a new car. Now, I have a car similar to what he has, a vehicle. I bought mine used for about a fifth, not a fifth, 5% of what he's paying for. I don't think it's 10%. No, it's like a fifth, 5% of what he paid for his vehicle. Now, I've put some money into mine. I've done some tweaking on it. I like tinkering anyway, so I put some new accessories on mine that bring it up to the capabilities, other than the fact that mine has an older engine and it has, you know, way more horsepower than mine. It's fine. I don't use 500 horsepower going down the road typically. I got something I can tow behind my motorhome. I can use for a little get-around car when we go camping. It's not really a car. It's a Jeep. Okay, let's just say it's a Jeep. Let's just call it a Jeep. It rhymes with Jeep. This guy got a Jeep. He got a brand new Jeep. I got a 1997 with the straight six 4.0 automatic. It's not a Rubicon. It's nothing fancy. It's just a Jeep, soft top. Put a winch on it. Tow bar, all that stuff, so I can tow by my motorhome. I don't care if my vehicle gets scratched. If I'm driving down the trail and there's a limb sticking out and my side of my vehicle gets scratched a little bit, you think I'm going to cry about that? I'm not even going to give it a second thought. Oh, I'll just put some paint on there. I'll fix that up a little bit. It probably costs more to fix the scratch than I paid for the vehicle. I didn't buy the vehicle because I wanted to keep it shiny and new. I wanted to use it. And using it, especially that kind of particular vehicle, a Jeep, it's going to get some scratches if you're actually using it. So I guarantee you, this guy, the first scratch or ding he puts in this vehicle, he's going to be ticked off. He's not going to be happy about it. He's an easygoing guy, but I guarantee you, something inside of him will sink a little bit. It will sink a little bit. Guarantee you. I remember the first scratch I put in my brand new pickup truck when I bought it back in 2003. I still have the pickup truck, by the way. It's got a lot more scratches in it now. And no, I don't really care about scratches now in it anymore. It's 20 years old. Still runs great. Needs a new bed on it, which I'm going to be working on. But the fact is, if I'd have bought it, when it was 10 years old or 5 years old, I wouldn't have cared about that scratch. Because I wasn't paying for a brand new truck. I'd probably paid half as much, maybe less, for that truck. I got a motorhome that's over 20 years old. Diesel pusher, Class A. You know what? When I drive into a campground and there's low-hanging trees, I don't care. I don't worry about it. It doesn't stop me. Just drive right through them. I don't care. No more than I paid for this motorhome. I feel bad for the trees. I don't feel bad for my motorhome at all. So it is. I have a boat that's 30 years old. Actually, it's more than that. It's almost 40 years old. You think I care about my boat when I run into the dock? I care more about the dock. I'm concerned about scratching the dock and getting me. I don't care about the boat. I care about it, but it's not like I would if it was a brand new boat. I see people so concerned about getting a scratch on their brand new boat or their new boat, 1 or 2 years old or whatever it is. I can't relate to that. I mean, believe me, I would love to have a brand new boat. Don't get me wrong. If somebody wants to give me a brand new boat, I'll take it. Okay. But I know it's going to get scratched. It's just going to happen. And it's a miserable feeling when you have this perfectly pristine boat and you're keeping it up and then something happens or something stupid happens. Somebody else runs into it. And you get a scratch. Something weird happens. The first stain on the side or whatever it is. It doesn't faze me because I own it outright. I paid cash for it, got a good deal on it, was able to put money into it, and it's still worth more than I haven't invested in it. And I could turn around and sell all my toys right now and come out ahead. That's not the case if you buy stuff new. Now, I don't know why this show has gone into this whole thing. I've been talking about this stuff for an hour. You go out and buy this brand new stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But can you afford it? And I think that's where we've, as a nation, we just feel like, well, we should be, we're gonna, like, it's like we're entitled to this stuff. And the value of a dollar, the value of I could go into this whole thing about spending money right now. People are just unable to discipline themselves to save anything. And I've noticed this, people who are very close to me, Just because you're making the money today doesn't mean that you have the money to spend. It's if you're still in debt, you're still in slavery. That's what it amounts to. You are, the debtor is the slave to the lender, and there is no getting around that. Do everything you can to get out of that slavery. Because I guarantee you, it's a whole different world. It's a whole different life when you can work around that and get out of that, that circumstance, that predicament. Guarantee you. Totally different life. Way of life. So having said all of that, folks, after an hour, you didn't build that. That comment is, how do you want to say? It's asinine, first of all. It's also just a platitude that I think divides our nation between the haves and the have-nots. And for those who don't understand, who lack the ability to comprehend and really have been there, they don't get it. And I think that obviously there needs to be some understanding and education on the part of our public school system, first of all. Does not train people, teach people about life in general. And now it's gotten so woke about the social issues that this entitlement mentality has crept into everything. Now, I didn't talk much about politics today. I probably will talk more about politics, the things that are going on with Joe Biden, the administration, Hunter Biden, all the stuff that's going on, the news media. Oh, by the way, Don Lemon got fired. Yeah, who cares? Again, here we go. Don Lemon got fired not because he was speaking the truth, but because it was scandalous. He was being rude, crude, and did all kinds of. In fact, the scandals that he had were worse than anything Bill O'Reilly ever did, and he was still there. He didn't get fired for those scandals. Anyway, so Joe Biden, of course, announced he's going to run for president again. Everybody's all excited about that. Yeah. I'm heading off today to probably go to a store down in Fort Wayne, and I'm looking at purchasing some items. And I'm doing some coaching with a fellow that wants to get involved in voiceover. Which is a service that I do. I do coaching for voiceover stuff, and I do voiceover. Voiceover is my main job. It's my main business, I should say. I do other things, but really, the voiceover thing is who I am. That's where my niche is right now, and probably will be for a number of years. Well, for far longer than I'm doing this other side thing right now, just because I can't see myself doing that for more than a couple more years. In fact, I almost quit the other day. Friday night, I was just done. I couldn't make it back. I was trying to get back from Dallas. Couldn't get back. Everything was all messed up in Dallas because of the weather. And ended up having to spend another night. Had to spend the night there till Saturday. Finally got out Saturday morning. Made it home, surprisingly enough. And, but it's just, one more night away from home. It was just too much. I was just ready to be done. And just about told him here you go. I can take this job. I don't want to, I'm done with this. But I know that I was really tired and that was influencing a lot of how I felt about what was going on at the moment. So that was part of it. So folks, I want to thank you for putting up with my rants today. A little bit of a story of my life today, basically. Or a small facet of my life. I probably should just write a book about my life. That would be interesting. To me, to some people, maybe. I don't know. Maybe nobody. I don't know. I've done a lot of stuff. Well, most people have. I think most people, if they sat down and wrote the story of their life out, they'd be amazed at how interesting their life is. The things that they've experienced, the things that they've done. Now, I've been off the charts. And sometimes I don't realize how much, until I start telling people about some of the stuff, like I'll be sitting around with somebody for about 2 or 3 hours and realizing, as the conversation goes, and I start realizing, holy cow, I've got a whole lot of life experience here. And I'm not trying to brag about it. I'm just saying it's just, wow, this is hard. It's hard to believe sometimes that these people aren't going to believe me that I've done all this stuff. I was heavily involved in martial arts. I was a black belt in Taekwondo, Jung Do-kwon. I had a studio of my own at the age of 19. Another business I was in, by the way. I was also a scuba diver when I was in high school, and I became a scuba instructor. Scuba diving instructor, karate instructor. Got involved in aviation. Became a flight instructor. I went to 1 year of Bible college, became a worship leader. I was a licensed lay minister for a while. I was a preacher, as well as a youth worker, youth pastor. I was, I play guitar, piano, and drums. I'm really a drummer. As I said, I started playing snare drum in grade school. But it's kind of hard to lead worship with a drum. So I learned how to play guitar, and then I taught myself how to play piano. Taught myself how to play guitar too, I guess. And then I did take, when I was in grade school, I did take 2 weeks of piano lessons, to be fair. Couldn't stand that. So I just learned on my own. But I ended up starting out, a couple businesses along the way. Came from a family of, my grandpa had businesses, my dad had businesses. It's just kind of a thing. I guess it's just, like I said, it's in my DNA. About everything I've gotten involved in, I've become an instructor in. I went to work for an airline. I became an instructor at the airline. Simulator instruction, a full motion simulator. I became an instructor for that company. This is just kind of the person. It's called a multi-potentialite. Look it up sometime. There's actually a good TED talk, an interesting TED talk on what a multi-potentialite is. Multi-potentialite. Some people call them scanners. Some people call them other things. But just take a look at it. Maybe you are one. If you're having a hard time figuring out who you're supposed to be in life, what your career is supposed to be, and you kind of go from one thing to the next, you can become very good at something and then you move on to the next thing. Something totally different. I now work in voiceover, and I'm starting to coach people and teach people and train people in voiceover. I don't know how, I have the feeling this is going to last a long time because it is a very creative thing and it changes all the time, which is what my brain needs. Podcasting. Look at me, big shot podcaster now. And I'm not saying you don't have to necessarily be totally like awesomely successful, as the world would say, in doing that. I've attained the goals that I set out to attain in most cases. Maybe not making as much money as I'd like to make, but that's not necessarily my goal. My goal was to learn the best I could and then move on to the next thing. And I've attained that, which in that sense of the word, I've attained success. Not because I have a brand new car, but because I have attained the goals of achievement that I had set out to make. To some degree. Now, that side of a personality also has other issues that are not so pleasant and perfect and wonderful. Creative minds have a tendency to be very scattered in some ways. It's hard to pull it into a discipline of getting some other things done. And if there's no motivation, if there's nothing that's interesting about washing the dishes, for example, it's very difficult. You have to really be deliberate about getting those things done. mowing the yard, fixing the mower, doing the cars, changing the oil, whatever it is that you're doing, takes a lot of deliberation. That's a word. To get it done. And it's because it's not fascinating. It's not interesting. It doesn't captivate your aptitude or your inclination. So it's just, yeah. So hopefully I've helped someone today discover more about themselves by me sharing about myself. I doubt it, but maybe, who knows? Even if we just save one life. Folks, I want to thank you for listening to my little story, my little humble life that I've lived. Interesting little life. And if you, hopefully you've got something out of it. Maybe you've been inspired. Maybe you've been inspired in a negative way. I don't want to be like that guy. But maybe you've been inspired in other ways. And that'd be great if you are. If not, well, I hope you've just found it interesting. I hope it hasn't been a waste of your time. But in the meantime, pray for our nation. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully, tomorrow morning, very early. We'll have another show. That's the way it's going to go. God bless everybody. Have a great week. I'll be praying for you. Be praying for everybody.